from Agile Australia. It's the Agile Revolution, and today it's near day, end of day one. I've got myself regular, somewhat regular co-host, Tony.
I've had my Metamucil. Tony here.
Craig.
Hello. I'm more regular than a lot of you.
Okay, it's not a competition. And we've got a special guest today, Adrian Fidelani. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Renee.
Now, a bit about yourself, Adrian. You're at Envato?
Yeah, I'm at Envato.
Been here for ages.
Oh, 3 years, yeah. It's a place you don't want to sort of walk away from. It's a really good, I've had a great time there. It's a great place to work, and there are some really significant agile challenges and a lot of really interesting things that we've done in agility that have kept me really busy and really engaged the whole time. I love it.
Okay, I'm going to be the voice of the listener. What the hell is Envato?
Envato is a marketplace for creative assets, so all creative digital assets. If you're a person who wants to make a digital creative project, maybe you're making a documentary, you could get the opening credits on Envato's marketplace. You could get the photographs. You can get the music to go over the opening credits. You can get the fonts, and you can get a website template to advertise your movie once it's produced. All of that stuff in a marketplace. So we don't produce any of this stuff, but authors of that stuff put it up for sale, and then documentary makers, say, would buy all of that stuff through the marketplace. Mm. And we take a little money on the way.
So is it just movies, or is it...
No, it's all those things. So it's photographs, it's music, it's all of the things that you can think of if you're making something digitally and creative. Anything that you can think of, pretty much, you can buy it there. So 3D models, code. The biggest thing we've probably got is WordPress templates.
I was going to say WordPress.
Yeah, WordPress
templates.
Templates for them,
yeah, that's really... So Theme Forest
is the one we use? No, okay. Well, I don't think any of our WordPress...
Just anyway, nod and say yes. Yeah, nod and say yes.
But essentially, that's probably what we're most famous for, but we serve a much larger creative community online, and our focus is on providing them a way to earn money online. So the great stories about Envato are the ones where people are able to rise above their situation and make a living online doing something that they love. Earning from their creativity by placing it on Envato, where we've got the eyeballs, so that they can get exposure for their creativity, and people are able to buy that stuff. And suddenly you find people earning, well, relatively lots of money in their country, or
comfortable living.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And we've had people who are earning relatively lots of money compared to us. You know, there's a lot of millionaires who've made their way through Envato. So it's a really good place, an interesting place to work, and it gives you all of that. You know, that feeling of service that you really need, I think, to be satisfied in your work. You really
which I guess is interesting, because this conference is, the theme is towards the Agile Country, and we were just in Lisa Fraser's talk, where she was talking about the millennials, particularly taking on freelancing, and a large percentage of millennials in the workforce is now moving towards that. And Envato's been around for a while now. It was one of the very early storefronts, I guess, in that space.
Yeah, and those are exactly the kind of people who are our customers. It's amazing how often you run into someone wearing your Envato t-shirt, and they'll say, look, from any walk of life, any kind of job, I bought a photo off you, I bought a template from Envato. I love Envato. Designers, you know, people have a real affection for the company and the work that we've done.
That's good. So what do you do there for the listeners? So I think that's the important thing.
I'm the program director.
It's about you.
Yeah. Also your management.
We're blessed today.
Envato has had, I think, in my observation, it had a personality, but it like a lot of companies grew, and so it sort of had a change in personality. And I came along at the start of that, I think, about 3 years ago, where we sort of needed to organise ourselves a little bit more, a little bit better as we got bigger. So I was part of a group that came through to bring some experience in managing things in agile ways, and I was the first agile coach, for example, and the program manager at that stage for market. And really what that means, it might be interesting to you guys, we have a very different approach, or different attitude towards program management. So we call it program management. I'm the program director, but we're very committed to self-organizing teams, and that means bottom-up program management, I call it. So we don't have a portfolio of projects that we push to the teams and expect them to be completed. We have ideas, but what we really do is have four main themes, which are published and distributed and explained quite well, and those themes have goals in and of themselves. So it might be about retaining, it might be about building the customer base. On behalf of the authors, we want authors to earn more money, and how to do that, we need to bring them more customers. So that might be one of the themes. So we then set some teams loose on that idea and say, well, what backlogs would you build in order to bring more customers for the authors? Mm. So we do that, and we're really genuine about that. What that means, though, from my perspective, is that I'm much more about building a picture of what's actually going on at team level rather than informing the teams of what they're going to be doing. So it's about getting around to all of the teams and making a clear picture of what's actually going on. That's what becomes the program. We try to make it's no good having a list of projects that aren't really running because there's something completely different going on in the teams. We really want to bring that out of the teams. The other thing I do there is I help provide some of the agile coaching. So we've got three agile coaches there now, and I help guide those.
How big is the workforce?
So we have 80 to 100 in the market there, in the market area where I am, but hundreds across the world. So we're very distributed. We've got lots of interesting... There's so many interesting things about Envato that have really excited me. We're a very flexible and distributed workforce. So our attitude to teams has been for a long time... when I turned up 3 years ago, I'm all about co-locate, our stuff. But it's stupid now. You just, like, we ran out of Ruby developers in Melbourne, and what do you do next? Well, we've got to get them from somewhere. So our options were, well, do we put co-located teams in Perth? And we decided what we'd do is say, no, we'll have any person working in any team, regardless of where they are, and we'll make that work. So we're coming at it that way and trying to build really engaged, really committed, and really close agile teams that may happen to have a team member in Perth or Adelaide or wherever, Canberra, we've got some. We're trying to go time zone by time zone out that way, so trying to keep it close. But we do have people working from the States or from Europe for long periods of time who just exist in their team as normal.
And how do they, when they're distributed, continue alignment with what they're doing or support each other? Yep. Do you still do ceremonies? And
we do, but we are, and it's really, it's not easy. We still do ceremonies, and so all the teams will have a stand-up, all the teams will have a retro, but the way that they do those might change. So we're really pushing towards asynchronous communication. So we're using Slack, we're using lots of Google Docs, we're using Trello, heaps. So all of those things combined, the team will find a way to engage with the person who's not in Melbourne mm-hmm. in the way that they need to get the information or to get the communication or the connection that they need. Mm-hmm. We fly them in. There's a budget for that. Fly them in so they can come and visit a couple of times a year.
Yeah, that's good.
We also, we do that. We also have a policy of being able to work from anywhere. So if you don't need to let us know if you're not coming in to the office, you just stay at home and your team just works it out with your team. If you would like to travel, you can do so for up to 3 months a year and work as you travel in any country, in any time zone, and you just work it out with your team. So these things make it normal to have a person who's not here at the table with us. And it's quite contrary to all of the things that maybe I believed initially as an agilist about the bandwidth of communication being so important to real collaboration and real connection between people. And maybe I still believe that to a great extent, but it's interesting and fun to observe and just throw yourself all in with, no, well, that's old school now. The millennials won't cop it. They won't come in anymore. Yeah. So let's get on board and let's see what happens when we try to apply these ideas to massively distributed teams working in different time zones to their own convenience.
So I'll ask the old school question when you're mentioning about program management before. So the old school program management approach in most large organisations is every project manager files a status report, that status report goes up to a PMO, the PMO puts that together in a report, the report goes through to the board. If you're sort of taking that more agile approach to that, and you're saying that you're basically going around and talking to the teams about what's going on. How do you get that that status, and how did you avoid that whole death by report type of culture?
And it's funny you say, Craig. I mean, the things that you mentioned there are very foreign to most of the people now entering the workforce. And we had the Activate Agile, right? And if you say, look, I'm going to give you an alternative to a project report that's lightweight and doesn't require a lot of time, it doesn't require a project manager, they're going to go, well, I don't care. Like, I never saw a project. I don't even know what a project report is. And the one paragraph you're asking from me is too much. Go away. So you've got to be flexible, and you've got to provide things. This asynchronous communication that I talk about, you've got to provide it in a convenient way. Because we've got people who aren't in the office or in the time zone who are going to be reporting on this stuff. Basically, what it boils down to, though, Craig, is the team owns everything, and the team's responsibility is to emanate or radiate the information that relates to the activity going on inside. It's constantly evolving the way that we do that, and we're constantly trying to find more convenient ways to both provide that information and to distribute that information. So at the moment it looks like a lot of it happens in Google Docs, but it's a timeline type document. It looks a little Gantt charty, but the team updates it themselves and they say, this is our timeline for the project that we're on. It's not a plan, it's a view. So it's not a promise. If they need to extend it, they just say it's extending. If they need to bring it back, it's coming back. If they want to publish the next thing, they can publish the next thing. If they don't know, they don't know. But their responsibility is to update that every fortnight.
Which means you can just always go and hit the same document and see what's going on.
One document, all over the place. We have that's on a sort of next 3 months sort of level, and that's updated fortnightly with all these comments. And every fortnight I'll take that and condense it into a report that I write. It takes me about a couple of hours, and I give a little paragraph and I distribute that everywhere. A little paragraph on each team and what's going on. We also have what we call our launch ceremonies, our launch wall. So I've got a physical wall and a digital one that are connected, and these are the things that are launching in the next 2 weeks. So you've got a sort of 3 month view of what's going on overall, but the things that are really important, and there's one other aspect that I'll go on to in a minute, but the things that are really important are the things that are going to land in the next 2 weeks. 3 years ago, the support team would say, the first time we find out about a feature is when the first help ticket arrives. We didn't know it launched, we didn't know what it's about, we don't know how it works, and we don't even know how to support it. So we took this mantra of no surprises. Let's have no surprises. And it was everyone's, if someone had something that they were going to do or deploy that would have an impact on anyone else, it became their responsibility to let them know, to make sure they knew. And if the surprise happened, then it's the person's fault who's made the impact. So we have that, and what that's resulted in is a bit of a stand up every day and a clear picture of what's launching in the next couple of weeks, sprint by sprint. The third aspect is projects, what we call projects. When we call it a project, it means it involves more than one team, and we need legal involved or finance or something like that. And in those occasions, we form what we call a circle, maybe a little bit of a holacracy idea borrowed, where representatives of the teams involved will form a circle around this project. That circle is facilitated, not managed, and the people who are in that circle own the project. But they have a facilitator who will help them keep records, help arrange the service ceremonies, help facilitate the communication in between, and do a little bit of chasing.
That sounds really awesome.
No wonder you don't want to leave.
Yes, it does thank you too.
Well, it is awesome, but it's not, it's not Disneyland either. I mean, all of the things that I'm telling you about are, some of them are, they don't happen other places, that means we're working them out as we go. We're learning what we can. We come to the conference, we've got good connections and good relationships with people in other businesses that are helping us learn. But there are ideas that come from really what we want to be, and all this just comes from what Envato wants to be. That's really important to us, that we're a values-driven company, and any of the practices that we implement always need to reflect our values. So because of that, the things that we might want to implement may be opposed to some of the things that you see most places because it's not in line with what we want to be.
Well, I think that's an element of you are effectively a creative company, so very much in that growth mindset sort of space where the people that you engage with as customers for yourself, the artists and themselves, they have that similar mindset. So it makes sense that you've got aligned values to them.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. Oh, no, to be honest, I've always found that our our industry is quite a creative one, and maybe that's something that's missed with the, you know, they talk about a bit of a vacuum of kids wanting to do this sort of stuff. But I think it's misunderstood that our industry is a very creative one, that the software development and delivery industry has scope to really reflect one's personality and one's creativity.
It is a vacuum though, isn't it? That there's a lot of kids not moving into that.
Yeah, it's true, and especially
that whole
women.
Scheme now, yeah. So yeah, definitely women. There's definitely a vacuum there as well.
So there's another area where
everyone's looking at me. I feel very awkward right now.
Well, you're our resident gender expert.
So moving on to your talk at Agile Australia. Unfortunately, we're having the podcast before we've actually seen your talk, and the reason why...
Oh, it's brilliant,
right? I'm sure it is. The reason why is that Craig and myself are talking exactly the same time. Yeah. However, the reason really why I wanted to bring on board is because your talk's around the Monte Carlo simulation.
You should also remember that most people listening to this in some number of months' time is
Craig's production ability.
So I first heard about the Monte Carlo sort of technique a few years ago from the Lean Kanban community, and I've tried a few times to look into it. I've tried to watch presentations. It's been really hard for me to conceptually grapple. So in 1 minute or less, what's your elevator pitch? What is it?
It's something that can replace the subjective type of estimation for projects that most teams use. So it doesn't rely upon subjectivity of a comparative estimate like you might use your t-shirt sizes or your Fibonacci points. So it doesn't rely on that. What it does is it takes a lean manufacturing approach, which says, and the version that I teach or that I'm familiar with or I like, relies on takt time. So takt time is the time it takes in between deliveries. So how often is it story taken? And very basically, if you want to, if you know the number of user stories and you know the takt time, you should be able to make a multiplication. 50 user stories times 3 days equals 150 day project. But this method allows you to model projects in that way, using what you know about a team's recent takt times or historic takt times, and say, let's build 10,000 reproductions of what this project might look like by randomly sampling takt times and randomly generating new takt times that are probabilistically believable from what you know. So you spawn thousands of takt times and you say, if we ran 10,000 projects of 50 user stories, randomly selecting intervals between the stories, how long would it take? You then build, that builds a range of delivery dates. So it doesn't predict one date. It says, here is the distribution of delivery dates based on the simulations.
So I'm slightly confused from a terminology perspective, so maybe Tony can help me out here. When you were talking, I almost heard cycle time, not takt time. I thought takt time was the demand frequency or demand rhythm.
Yeah, so they call it the drumbeat. Takt time is a German word.
Right.
And what it means is it's the time that it usually takes a process to deliver to the other process.
Yep.
Which is...
So if you ever
having
took
a lean
the...
expert on the podcast has finally paid off.
Thank you. I just finally fulfilled my destiny.
If you ever get a chance, take the, and you better hurry up, you can take the tour of Toyota out in Port Melbourne, and they talk about takt time the whole tour.
I see, yeah.
So they say, we sold 10,000 cars, we make them just in time. So we need to run this factory at a takt time of 7 minutes, which means a car comes off the
demand,
end
right,
of the production line every 7 minutes.
7 minutes, yeah.
So it's not how long it is from one end to the other, but how frequently do we get a car?
Request, yes.
Or a user story.
So I think the literal actual translation is drumbeat, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, there's a German girl at work who said, I don't think there's a literal translation, but it's like the orchestra conductor, the beat that the orchestra conductor makes.
The drum beat.
The demand beat is really what it is. Okay, good.
So in order to run that simulation, how much data do you need from your previous projects in order for that to be successful?
I mean, few as five example takt times.
So let's look at the last five stories.
Yeah. So the last five sprints, say.
Okay.
You can do. What it does is it randomly samples those, and the Monte Carlo part is the proliferation of new samples from that. So you take the five, and the Monte Carlo star, the bootstrapping of the Monte Carlo, generates new, realistically believable and probabilistic attack times that are, that this team would do.
Right.
Fantastic. So you might have 10,000 of those. So you then have a chance to say, well, if I've got 10,000 examples, believable examples of what this team, the rhythm on which this team might deliver, then I can pretend like I've got, it doesn't matter what the size of the estimates of the stories were, I just take 50 stories and I say, run me an example, run me a simulation of a story randomly taking sample times from the 10,000, attack times from the 10,000, and do it again, and do it again, and do it again, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, and show me the distribution of the outcomes there. So I can say, on these simulations, 50% of the time or less, it took 9 sprints. 70% of the time, it took 10 sprints or less. You can do that. That's how it does. Why it's good is that it doesn't attempt to be precise, it doesn't pretend to be precise, but it builds the stakeholders, the business, whoever, the team, a realistically believable, it builds them a something that they can look at and say, would I take the risk? Would I take the risk at 50% a prediction of 7 sprints? Would I? And that's good information. It's better than pretending like it's going to be exactly 7 sprints and then finding out in the 6th that it's going to be 9.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you can see on this distribution, actually the computer thinks, the model thinks, that at a 90% rate, you know, to get 90% conviction that this is going to happen, we need to be out at 10 or 11 or 12 sprints. And you can show that to someone and say, well, let's hope for that, but I can see that, you know, there's a good chance it'll be that.
Do you think it's easier to sell that type of process to an organisation or founders that, I guess, had already sort of grown up in that startup mentality? I mean, because I've seen this before, but then I come back to, if I try to sell that back to a large insurance company, telco, here... doesn't matter sort of what data I've got.
It shouldn't be that hard to sell with anyone who's had experience with software delivery projects. Because as soon as you say, how many times when you're told it's 8 weeks, how many times when you're told it's 8 months, how many times when you're told it's 14 weeks, is it 14 weeks?
Well, you'd think so, but the amount of years we've been trying to teach them about estimation. So I'm just wondering, I wonder if that success, it was a lot easier just because you've got an organisation that can accept that data.
Yeah, and the other thing to remind you of, Craig, is that we don't use this. We don't enforce this on the team. The team wishes to use this as its method of forecasting. Mm. It's available to them, and we can coach it and we can help them with it. But they don't all do that. Mm. They don't all do that. They don't have to do that. None of our practices are enforced. None of them are prescribed. But all of the teams know about this, and they've all interacted with it at some stage. Yeah.
It's still in your toolkit, though, because if they come to you and estimate in a traditional fashion, say you can still run the forecasting tool over that to call BS on them if you like.
Yeah, it's good that they've got a suite of a comfortability factor over the ones that they want, right? So I think that's a really good approach. Is saying here's a different bunch of ways you can do it. That's excellent because you often see, and I'm guilty of it too. I've done it too. If you say to the teams, "This is how you're going to do it," because it's easy for us to get you to adopt that. But.
Well, if they're going through the motions.
So how is it different to effectively like a release burn up where you've got a plus or minus of, I don't know, 15 or 20%?
Maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't, Renee. It's a different way.
Okay, well, we're done on this podcast then. Thanks for coming in.
Well, what I think it does, it is different in a few ways. First of all, what's backing your 15 to 20%? Just because what data is in place that's showing you that's helping you prove that you think it could be an extra 15 or 20% either way. That's my mate.
Oh, there we go. We had an intruder to the podcast and we weren't sure. They were making hands.
So this has got data and it's in place. You can see the data right there in front of you. You can see. Could be 15%, could be 20% that way, this way. And then here are the numbers that show that. The other thing is, it's non-subjective. So it's not, the teams aren't on the hook, Renee, for this. The teams, you want to see their faces. When you say to them, hey, how long is this going to take? And they come back and they go... They go away on their own and they say, I think Renee wants to hear 8 weeks, right? And that, you know how often it's going to come back and they're going to say 8 weeks? Probably every time. Mm. But they don't believe it's 8 weeks. Mm. And sometimes if you've got the trust, they might come to you and say, look, I think it's 8 weeks, Renee. I could do it in 8 weeks, but it's probably 12, right?
Yeah.
When you do it this way, and they go away and they feel the pressure for the next 8-12 weeks, they feel the pressure building on this delivery, right? What this does, when you do it with a team, they walk away from that going, hey, thank God the computer sent 12 weeks. Mm. You know,
yeah.
It's not us. They're not. They're looking at the spreadsheet, going, "How long's the spread?" The business people are looking at the spreadsheet, going, "How long's it going to take?" They're not looking at us and going, "You idiots, got it wrong again." That's the way they feel anyway. But they can feel a real relief from this and walk away from it going, "That's probably more in line with what we really thought, but what we didn't want to say."
So I would imagine it's quite well aligned to the No Estimates movie in that it's really a scientific approach based upon historics of predictability.
That's it. It's empirical. You look at what's happened before and you apply it and the Monte Carlo applies the uncertainty. It builds the uncertainty into the model.
And you just do it by Excel, you plug in some stuff and
there's so the people who do come to the talk tomorrow on my website I've got a link to a Google Doc that does it all. So
could
Google
the people who listen have access to
yes,
that?
Yes, they can. It's at scrummage.com, 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 and there's all the stuff's on there, tack time simulations. It's good fun. It's another way of as a coach of just bringing a new angle or a new excitement to another area of software delivery or team life, which is estimation and forecasting. Maybe you guys would like to have a look at it this way, or maybe you'd like to stick with velocity, or maybe you'd like to do something else. It's a good thing to have in your toolkit.
I think you nailed on the head where you said that you can take that tool and when you've got that gut feeling that you've been forced at 8 weeks, but you're telling you 12, that's where I think the real value is for traditional teams that can't come out the other way. I think that's great.
It's just a thing, and I love it. I think it's great. Some of the teams I've worked with who are going, "Never bring this near us again. We hate it." And then others who are using it now, I don't get near it anymore. They're still using it week after week. They're reassessing their projects and building in the last sprint's tack time into the model to see what they're predicting for the next 12 weeks. So it's horses for courses, and it's a new way of looking at things.
That's excellent. I really enjoyed the conversation. I might make an effort to come to the Monte. Oh, that would mean I couldn't come to your talk.
Oh, well. So if people want to contact you, do they contact you at scrummage.com?
Yeah, I tweet it at adfit11, ADFIT11. You can get in touch with me that way or whatever. I think I've done my best to plaster me mug all over the bloody internet, so Google me.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
All right. So we have a little thing here,
Here
we go. One, two, three.
Viva la revolution!
Thanks, guys.
Actually,
excellent, Luke. That was really good. I enjoyed that.